Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer with you on WNYC. Hello, everybody. Let's follow up on the story Richard was just reporting to begin for a few minutes today. We're going to go out to Flatbush for WNYC reporter Stephen Nesson after another night of protests. Several dozen arrests reported, as you heard, the protests in response to the police shooting over the weekend of 16-year-old Kimani Gray, who police say was armed and pointing a gun at them, though some witnesses dispute that. Hi, Steve. Where are you? Set the scene.
Hey, good morning, Brian. I'm on Church Avenue and 55th Street, right where the vigil was held last night. There's dozens and dozens of those candles, posters for Kimani Gray, or Kiki as they call him, trash bags full of expired candles. And I actually have to tell you, there's less of a police presence than there was the Tuesday morning after the Monday night incident where the Rite Aid was sacked. And there was some, aggression and violence that night. But there is one of the mobile police command units out here, and there certainly are officers patrolling the street.
Are residents telling you that there's an underlying issue here? This is not just about Kimani Gray, as we've been starting to hear from people, but this is kind of, this touches a nerve that's been underlying because of Stop and Frisk?
Yeah, you bet, Brian. I mean, pretty much talk to every other person and they'll tell you they've been stopped, they've been frisked. I talked to one guy the other day who said he gave up driving in the city because he's pulled over every time and it just tacks on 30, 40 minutes to wherever he's going. And they're definitely upset about it. They say there's a lot of mistrust between the police and residents. I talked to one woman whose son is the same age as Gray, and she says it's unbelievable what they're doing to the kids. And she was out last night with many parents who just said they're sick of it. They also are demanding a serious investigation of the shooting, which has greatly upset them, of course.
And do you think that it's going to wind up mattering to the community response? I'm sure it will. What the details of the incident turn out to be? I mean, we remember things like Amadou Diallo and Sean Bell, where the people who were shot by police were unarmed. If this does turn out to be, as the police are characterizing it, where this is somebody who was actually aiming a gun at two undercover officers, does that change the dynamic in the community?
I mean, I would say so. I can imagine just based on the woman I spoke with, it would be devastating if they had just shot a 16-year-old kid who was unarmed. All the parents here, their stomach drops when they hear stuff like that. I think any parent would. So the details are definitely going to matter, and people are definitely following the case out here.
And we will come back to this story and continue to follow it. WNYC Steve Nesson on Church Avenue in Flatbush, thank you very much.
Thanks, Brian.
And this police shooting is also drawing attention to the mayoral candidates' positions on stop and frisk reform. We'll take stock of the Democratic candidates in the New York City mayoral campaign generally now. We recently finished our first round of interviews on the show with all the candidates, 5 Democrats, 5 Republicans. And this week saw some other interesting campaign news. The purported frontrunner, Christine Quinn, officially entered the race. Mayor Bloomberg's sugary drink limit divided Quinn and candidate Bill de Blasio and maybe others. So let's talk about all of this with WNYC political reporter Anna Sale and Ozzie Paber from Capital New York. Hi, Anna. Hi, Ozzie.
Hi.
Hello.
First on Flatbush, here is a short snippet of Police Commissioner Kelly and Brooklyn Councilman Jumaane Williams on Tuesday after Williams mentioned the shooting incident to Kelly at a city council hearing.
And I noticed you didn't mention anything about a 16-year-old with a gun the other evening that brought about this.
Well, I will think what you want to do is little the problem. So we're not going to pretend that what happened yesterday was just one incident. It is not about the details of one shooting.
So, Ozzie, that's City Councilman Jumaane Williams and Police Commissioner Ray Kelly from the Bloomberg administration, neither representing candidates for mayor or candidates themselves. Do you think there's significance of this exchange?
A lot. Jumaane Williams has for a long time been criticizing the NYPD and giving voice to what you would call the criticisms that are mostly coming from the left, and that's represented by candidates like John Liu, Bill de Blasio, and Bill Thompson, who say there is such a problem with the police that things have to change in a dramatic way. And Christine Quinn, who has praised Ray Kelly, sort of represents something a little bit closer to the administration and Ray Kelly, although she also has called for changes in stop and frisk. But what Jemani Williams is sort of giving voice to is this wider consideration. And if there's an agreement that there's a wider problem, then the people to the left of Quinn seem to have an issue to talk about.
You were at that hearing. Why did it get testy between the two of them?
It's been testy between them for a long time and for a while. Every time there's a chance. And remember, this was supposed to be a budget hearing about dollars and cents. And what it turned into was a policy debate and a specific debate about what was happening that night in Brooklyn. So for a long time, they've used an opportunity to question Ray Kelly as an opportunity to question the wider policies of the police department.
And Anna, do relations with the police come even more into the limelight now with this shooting and the community reaction to it? You know, again, we should say Gray may turn out to have been a gang member who was aiming a gun at the officers, as the police say. That would make him not exactly Amadou Diallo as a victim, but there's the underlying issue of anger over stop and frisk that this is tapping into. Do you see that as a changing dynamic in the race?
Absolutely. It's going to be a continuing dynamic. I mean, what you hear basically, the debate in the mayor's race is crime, you know, this specter of returning to the bad old days of crime, or the NYPD running roughshod in neighborhoods and pulling over people of color with stop and frisk. And so I think Ozzie was talking about this sort of left to centrist spectrum that we're seeing in the Democratic race, but also race is huge on this. When you look at polling on stop and frisk and on approval of the NYPD, white people in New York tend to approve of stop and frisk and the NYPD. Black people in New York tend to disapprove. Hispanics, it's a little more mixed. So what you also see is candidates in the Democratic field making plays for different parts of the electorate in the Democratic electorate here in New York City. John Liu is making a big play on the stop and frisk issue. He has said he wants it to be abolished altogether. He's announcing his candidacy for mayor on Sunday in the middle of a series of town halls he's hosting on stop and frisk. One is in Brooklyn and Bed-Stuy next week.
Race is a central dynamic always, Ozzie, in right. New York City politics. It hasn't come up so explicitly, maybe until now. Obviously, Bill Thompson is African-American.
Right.
Bill de Blasio, who's white, points to the fact that he's married to a black woman. They have a child who the police would identify as black on the street. So they, too, argue that they're personally connected and invested in stop and frisk policies. But do you see the racial dynamic in general as playing into how this race proceeds, how the candidates campaign and who votes how come primary day?
It's sort of unavoidable that race is a factor in races until something dramatic happens, like a congressman getting caught in a sexting scandal where all the dynamics of race sort of change for that particular person. People make decisions and campaigns make decisions with the underlying assumption of people who look like you are probably going to vote for you. If people see you and identify you in a way that they connect to, they will vote for you. And what's sort of tricky is to not get caught doing it so overtly. So what people and campaigns usually do is they talk about specific issues, like Anna says, that have resonance in certain communities. So when Bill Thompson goes to the Upper East Side to a community forum where a lot of people there are concerned about a marine transfer station and a garbage station, in his introductory remarks, he finds an opportunity to talk about, you know, term limits, but he also finds an opportunity to talk about stop and frisk. And you see candidates sort of carving out these particular niches so that they can hit chords with very specific communities, and it's usually being driven by this underlying assumption of race.
And as the election comes closer, it sometimes gets downer and dirtier. We remember 2001 when in the last days before the primary there were flyers distributed in parts of Brooklyn that either did or didn't come from the Mark Green campaign that disparaged Al Sharpton and things like that.
Which are reprints of a New York Post cartoon, I believe, of Freddie Ferrer kissing Al Sharpton's butt. And the assumption was if you elect Ferrer, Al Sharpton will appoint the next police commissioner.
And so we will see how this all develops along racial lines over time. City Council Speaker Christine Quinn officially entered the race over the weekend with a video and a five-borough walking tour. Let me play a clip from the beginning of Christine Quinn's video where she identifies with her father's union background.
My dad was an electrical worker, but really what he was a shop steward in his union. And he went on strike twice when I was a kid. So I learned through those experiences what it meant for people to hang together, to stay together, what it meant to him that his union never gave in, and what it meant to have good insurance because of his union. So when my mother was sick, we had no worries. She could get any of the care she ever needed because he had that union that took care of him.
Now, Anna, that was really interesting, I thought, because one way Quinn has been trying to separate her from herself from traditional Democratic politics is to align herself more with business, or at least sufficiently with business. So what do you make of this Valentine to the unions right up front?
Well, I think it's part of – you heard her sticking together. That's what the union ethos is about, solidarity. And then the video goes on to talk about how she loves New York because of this way that we're all in this together. So clearly on issues, she has not come out, you know, in the same way that others in the Democratic field have that are closer to alignments with the union. But she certainly wants to be seen as a friend of working people in New York City, and particularly the middle class, which is just about what every candidate is talking about, trying to make the city more affordable for middle class families.
Ozzie, I think Quinn sees herself as the front runner, so is running a big tent campaign, friendly to business and labor, and trying to seem concerned about both. Yes?
Well, in a Democratic primary, especially in New York City, it's never bad to praise unions. It's never bad to be seen as putting a personal narrative to that story. But also what's kind of interesting, and we saw this during the 2010 congressional races in New York, that if you're running in New York, you also have to treat Wall Street and big businesses very carefully and respectfully. You can't be part of the pitchfork crowd and run against Wall Street and be in New York City without there being on some level a backlash. These are the large businesses that actually fund a lot through taxes, a lot of the services that New York City largely enjoys. Now, the question is, how much should you tax them and to what degree? So to be supportive of unions is a standard line in Democratic Party circles.
And it becomes tricky when you get down to specifics. An issue that's become a defining difference between Quinn and the other Democrats is the paid sick leave bill that she opposes on behalf of small business, saying the recovery isn't strong enough yet, and she's not bringing it to a vote in city council. Politically, Anna, is Quinn making a name for herself with the business community on this issue, do you think? Or is it getting away from her and becoming bigger as, you know, a dividing line against other Democrats than she wanted it to be?
I think it's both, because she opposes paid sick leave because she says it's bad for the business community right now. She said she for months she said she supports it in spirit, but not given the current economic conditions. So that makes her look sensitive to the needs of small businesses. Of course, in the Democratic field, holding up this vote where when people like Bill de Blasio, public advocate, have made this a signature issue, others in the Democratic field are saying this is just an example of how Christine Quinn is undemocratic. She's blocking something that would be good for working people in New York City. So there's a public hearing on this next week. It's something she's been hammered on, and she's going to continue to be hammered on over the next several days.
Quinn also aligned herself with business this week, opposing Mayor Bloomberg's large sugary drinks limits. While at least one of the other Democrats, and I'll ask you to go down the list because you probably know the list better than I do, at least one, de Blasio, supported the mayor. Here is Quinn on Piers Morgan this week on CNN supporting the mayor in theory on the issue but not on this bill.
You know, look, I first of all want to applaud Mayor Bloomberg for being probably the most aggressive mayor in the country around the issue of obesity. And obesity is an epidemic that has enormously significant health consequences. And overall, I think he's doing a really good job on that issue. That said, the soda ban isn't one of his proposals in this area that I support, because my fear is that with issues around food and obesity, if you say no, people have almost a reflex reaction to do it, to go get it.
Christine Quinn on Piers Morgan, CNN. Ozzie, do you know everyone's position on that? De Blasio, Lou, Thompson, Albanese, the other Democratic candidates?
I believe, if I read the reporting correctly on this, that Bill de Blasio is the only one who says that he would continue to sort of make he would continue what Michael Bloomberg is trying to do, which is to mandate this type of regulation.
Should I read anything into the fact that Quinn even got that global FaceTime invite onto Piers Morgan? I don't think we're seeing de Blasio or Thompson or Lou on national media, Anna, are we?
Well, I think this speaks to Quinn's campaign, because you were talking about how she's running a five-borough neighborhood-based campaign. That's what she's doing here in New York City, this personality offensive. But then nationally, she would be the first woman mayor of New York City. She would be the first LGBT mayor of New York City. So she's got this national movement candidacy for a national audience. So I think that's the dynamic we're going to see here in New York City. She has a lot of foes on the progressive left. But nationally, she wants to be seen as this person who's breaking all sorts of barriers. And she's going to get attention for that from the national media.
Ozzie Quinn was asked this week on New York One's Road to City Hall, and we played the clip earlier in the week, about her $10,000 campaign donation from Coca-Cola, and said out of her $6 million campaign war chest, that's not enough to buy her position on large sugary drinks. Do you accept that at face value? It is a tiny percentage of $6 million.
I mean, I think what's interesting there is she's sort of saying something similar to what Michael Bloomberg is saying in terms of like size. Size matters in this case. And you're right. What she's arguing is that it's a pittance. It's not really enough to sway her vote. But it's an opportunity for critics to draw a connection. Michael Bloomberg has sort of done this masterfully when he criticizes or tries to undermine opponents by saying, you took money from special interest. I don't have that problem. I self-finance. And he sort of is allowed to play that argument. And it's harder for someone on the defensive, as Christine Quinn is doing, and she's doing rather well, I think, by saying, yes, I took their money. Yes, I disagreed with them. Or yes, I took their money, and yes, I agreed with them, but you shouldn't draw anything from it. It's a tricky position to be in, and it's up to a candidate. If you're going to accept the money, you also have to accept the responsibility of explaining it.
And I guess if you draw that argument out a little bit, you could ask, well, if $10,000 is a meaningless campaign donation, why would any ordinary person contribute $50 or $100 or $200?
Well, you get that match in the city's public campaign finance, that 6-to-1 match. So many candidates would take that $50.
Well, the candidate would take it, but what does it do for the individual? I mean, what does Coca-Cola think it gets for its money, Ozzie, seriously, in a case like that?
To be serious, they probably are hoping, and I hate to speculate on behalf of a donor that's able to give that kind of monies. But if you're a candidate, the thing that if you're someone who's able to write a large check, the one thing you don't want is to sort of be ignored. You don't want to be on the outside. You at least want the other person, if they agree with you or disagree with you, to take your call, to have a meeting with them. And if you write a check to someone, it's never bad to sort of curry favor with someone who's going to be elected. In that case, so you play the odds and you get in.
And on the same topic, looking ahead a little bit, tomorrow is a big day, Anna, because the candidates will release their quarterly fundraising statements. What are some of the things that you'll be looking for as a political reporter when those statements are released?
Well, we've seen some early reporting on what some of those numbers have been. We at WNYC don't report on those until we see the full filing, so we're not hoodwinked by secret debt that the campaigns don't tell us initially. But one of the questions is Joe Loda. What kind of fundraising was he able to do? He didn't do any fundraising until this particular filing period. So how much money, where did it come from? Who supported Christine Quinn maybe previously and is also writing a check for Joe Loda to cover their bases? Another question is Bill Thompson. He had a huge fundraising period in the last fundraising cycle in the last period, more than $1 million. Does that momentum continue? And so that's something we'll be looking at. Also, Adolfo Carrion, who's running on the Independence Party line. What kind of fundraising was he able to do over the last couple of months?
And one thing about Carrion, we're talking mostly about the Democrats in the race. We did a segment last week. Many of the listeners will remember with Greg David on the Republicans in the race. But let me stray just a little bit and bring up the Independence Party candidate who doesn't look like he's going to be in either primary, Adolfo Carrion, erstwhile Democrat, former Bronx Borough president, former Obama Urban Affairs appointee. He is hoping to run in the Republican primary, but that's looking less likely. He would have to get the approval of three borough party chairs, and he looks at this moment unlikely to get that. And I asked him on Monday's show if he would campaign actively in the fall, even if all he could be is a spoiler who winds up helping a Republican win.
I'm running to be mayor of the city of New York. If, as an independent, my intention is to be the winner of this race and to provide New York City the kind of leadership that the independent leadership that it needs. if somebody considers that being a spoiler, well, that's their interpretation because I'm spoiling their party, I guess.
So, Ozzie, should the Democratic nominee, whoever it turns out to be afraid, very afraid, or not afraid of Carrion? To come back to racial questions, the only Latino in the race, if he is the Independence Party candidate and nothing else?
I think the Republican candidate might be slightly more concerned than the Democratic candidate.
Really?
Because Democrats can do pretty well if they run on the Democratic line and have support from the Working Families Party. They usually do rather well. Republicans have a harder time cobbling together votes. Even if they got every single Republican vote, you would still probably need support on the Independence Party line. There's people in New York City, which is a 6-1 Democratic town, who will not pull the lever or push the button, as the case may now be with the new electronic machines, for a Republican candidate. But they will do it for the same candidate if they're on a different line. And not having that other line is more of a challenge for Republicans than Democrats.
The city hasn't elected a Democratic mayor in 20 years.
Right. And that's because of Michael Bloomberg's very deep pockets and a very different city when Rudy Giuliani was elected.
All right. Very briefly, you brought a clip of John Liu.
Yes.
Do you want to set this up?
Sure. John Liu was one of the candidates at a Democratic club meeting downtown, the Downtown Independent Democrats. And he was asked a question very directly about his electability, and which surrounds the issue of the federal investigation into his campaign. And he basically made a pretty strong defense that he was no better or no worse than anyone else who would have been in his situation.
So I don't know if there's any campaign that can defend themselves against an undercover agent that is intent on deceiving his way through into a campaign to make an illegal contribution to me or to any campaign. I look forward to the trials proceeding. I hope it doesn't get postponed again.
So that was a little off mic. But he was suggesting there that there was a setup, that somebody was out to entrap him by getting his campaign workers to engage in some kind of potentially illegal campaign activity for which they are now indicted?
Well, he doesn't exactly use the word entrapment, but he gives you that impression. He says that an undercover agent was intent, so intent on deceiving his campaign that anybody would have been ensnared in this problem if the undercover agent was so motivated as to trap him. So he's putting the onus on the investigator and saying if you hadn't done this, there would never have been a problem. So he's in essence making the entrapment argument.
And Liu does have a base, and I saw it when I moderated that forum on lower income issues. People were out there cheering him on as he stakes out positions on a left-right spectrum to the left of the other Democratic hopefuls for an $11.50 minimum wage instead of a $9 minimum wage, ending stop and frisk instead of reforming it, the abolition of subsidies to corporations that say they'll create jobs, whereas others say reform that process.
Yes, and another part of that video that Ozzie captured I thought was really interesting is he makes the argument that he's electable and he thinks that polls that have been coming out have not represented the how the electorate really is in New York City, that black voters, Hispanic voters, and Asian voters have not been counted exactly. So he's making the case that he can bring together this multiracial coalition, not white voters, but black, Hispanic, and Asian voters, and really be a force.
WNYC political reporter Anna Sale, Ozzie Pabra with Capital New York. The race goes on. We'll keep talking.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, what you can now carry onto airplanes again. Are you relieved or a little freaked out? Stay with us.